This podcast is sponsored by Athletic Greens. Now, you've probably heard of Athletic Greens from 1,000 different podcasts, and the reason why I believe is because it works. This is something I've been using every single day, and the biggest things that I've realized for myself is that I have more energy, I rarely if ever get sick, my poops are better, okay? There's multiple benefits here, and if you are interested in trying it, I have a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 AG1 travel packs by using the link drinkag1.com/Farzad. And my gut tells me, no pun intended, that you're going to love this product. Now onto the podcast. I do think Trump respects Elon quite a bit because he's a businessman, because he's an entrepreneur. Where he has flip-flopped is the EV stuff. On national security, ramping up the supply chain, ramping up manufacturing capacity, making sure that we outcompete our biggest rival in China. These are very palatable things to the political right. And what's interesting about this whole subject is, like, from the very beginning, if you really think about a company like Tesla, it should be non-political.
If you're in Elon's position, why in a million years would you ever endorse Biden? After the way that you have been treated for the last 4 years, and I know that a lot of people will cite, you know, hey, the IRA tax credits, you know, those are so good for adoption of EVs. It was a surprisingly intelligent piece of legislation from my perspective in how it incentivizes moving the raw material supply chain more to the United States. I fully support it in those regards. But as far as the way that it was architected, to give, you know, it's basically an attempt to try and extend the runway for Ford and GM and all these other legacy auto companies. And there's a certain someone that I happen to know who rightly was able to find out that they were trying to exclude Tesla from being eligible for these things in the first place. And I don't think that most members of the Tesla community remember that there was an attempt to specifically include a bunch of legacy OEMs for these credits and to exclude Tesla. So this was not a piece of legislation that was ever intended to be a piece of assistance to Tesla in their mission to accelerate the world's transition to a sustainable energy. This was an attempt to steal billions of dollars from taxpayers and put it in the hands of Ford, GM, and Stellantis, which owns Chrysler. And not only them, but also, you know, Biden's very blatant support of all the union contracted jobs, which there's just no way, you know, Biden has said the future of EVs is going to be made in America with union labor. The only way that that ever happens is if those union workers work for a Chinese owned auto company. They will never be made in volume meaningfully by a wholly United States owned automaker besides Tesla. Tesla's not going to be union, and the GMs and Fords and all them that are union are never going to make meaningful volume on this. It's just not going to happen. People need to wake up and smell the roses. And so, you know, that whole piece of legislation was an attempt that we were, as a Tesla community, successfully able to keep from being slanted against Tesla. This has not been a friendly administration to Elon or to Tesla. And that's just Tesla. Then when you start to think about everything that has happened with X, like, of course, this is the direction that Elon has decided to go this time around. I would have loved to see him put a little bit more support behind RFK, not necessarily because I think that RFK is just a ton better candidate than Trump this time around. But he's a legitimate third party candidate. And I think that just as a whole, more people need to support legitimate third party candidates so that we can have a better, more healthy system moving forward. You know, we have three branches of government for a reason. Why we think it's okay to only have two major parties, I'll never understand. But anyways, I think those are kind of my initial high level thoughts, that there's just no way you can't. And like I said, that's just friendliness. Not to mention the fact that this man is literally almost a walking corpse. Like, I have watched multiple extended family members walk through Alzheimer's, and the signs are there. Like, He's got something. Dementia, Alzheimer's. You know, he's there sometimes. Sometimes he's okay. And then other times he's not. And you just can't have that in that position. And so obviously Elon's not going to endorse Biden for a second term. And so really the only choice was, is he going to endorse RFK Jr. or is he going to endorse Trump? And I mean, I think it's pretty clear to everyone that RFK is not going to beat Trump. And so I don't know if this is just backing the winning horse. I don't know if it is him really feeling like Trump would be a better executive for the things that are important for the country moving forward. Immigration has obviously been something that has been very important to Elon. And I think Trump probably aligns with Elon's view on what needs to happen for immigration much better than RFK Jr. does. And then when it comes to, you know, a strong stance with regards to foreign policy and probably better leverage between the US and China, I think Trump is probably also a stronger candidate than RFK in those regards. And then, you know, I don't know exactly where Elon's going to fall on, you know, what all's going on with Ukraine as far as who would be better for Ukraine and for the situation in Gaza between Trump and RFK. But yeah, I think it just makes sense when you step back and look at it kind of policy by policy and motivation by motivation. Now there's going to be a lot of people that just have a reaction, I'm sure, that how can you possibly support Orange Man Bad, who is a threat to our democracy? And you know, those people have a right to their opinion, but Elon's going to Elon, just like he always does.
Your comment around, you were surprised by the lack of outrage around the sort of insinuation that there is something between a endorsement between Elon and Trump that's not necessarily a bad thing, that it might actually be a calculated move. That I was surprised by that. I do think that the unfortunate thing that happened on Saturday, which obviously was, you know, was, I mean, we both clearly agree it was just an awful thing that happened, regardless of who the candidate is, obviously.
And it's something that's always happened all throughout, you know, this is not new to American history, obviously, either, that assassination attempts have been made against presidents or vice presidents or, you know, various members of the government at high levels. It's pretty sick and disappointing. And it's not just, you know, the United States. Obviously, this is part of politics at that level. It's absolutely unacceptable. And I really did appreciate actually Biden's comments, which were surprisingly lucid about the whole situation. I felt like he did a good job of responding to the news that they had at the time with the information that they had available and just, you know, being very clear on the morality of the situation and, you know, supportive of Trump and his recovery and their efforts to defend him, obviously, as well.
It was a rare moment of unity for, like, you know, for however long, hopefully, you know, lasts. We'll see. But I do think, you know, if we sort of start moving forward from this situation, you know, thankfully, former President Trump is okay, and hopefully there's no more that comes out of this. I think for this forum that we have, what we spend a lot of time doing is trying to figure out where is this going to go, right? Like trying to figure out, okay, what are the variables that could happen here based on the movement, especially around Musk companies, which is something we heavily cover on this channel. How China plays into this, I think, is a very interesting angle. Very interesting angle, because I think Elon endorsing Trump is a much more sort of strong alignment with the nationalistic nature of that candidate and sort of this focus on business and trying to, you know, his whole slogan, make America great again, believe it or not, or, you know, depending up to you if you believe him through his actions or not, right? There seems to be a lot of focus around that. And I think one of the things from his previous administration that Trump had, the tariffs that he was able to negotiate with China, which put the United States at a better position relative to China, at least for the time being, I think is an indication that says within the context of electrification and electric vehicles and next generation transportation systems, which one is who, like what country is clearly leading in that respect? Clearly leading in that respect. It's China. It's obvious. And this is something that we cover very closely on this channel. Most electric vehicles in the world are made in China. The biggest auto market in the world is in China. The country that has by far the biggest alignment between business and governments to move electrification forward is China. The country that has the biggest alignment between companies and government to move autonomy forward is China. You know, the country that has a lot of resources and investments to get the supply chain up and running to plummet costs for electric vehicles is China. So from that respect, if you're Elon, one would think is like, okay, to your point, Biden has been openly hostile against Elon Musk. We can, you know, and the audience can formulate why, if that's fair or not. Not necessarily the point for this discussion. Openly hostile. There was an IRA bill that you've very smartly pointed out. Initially, Tesla was specifically left out, even though they checked all the boxes to be qualified. And it was specifically around the Model Y, which was the best-selling car of that year, which didn't qualify for the IRA tax credit because it wasn't being classified as an SUV, even though it very much was, right? And that had to get fixed. And that was like their way of what seemed like excluding Tesla. Elon being left out of the EV summit. Mary Barra being told that she led the electric car revolution. You know, you can go, you know, through and through. Biden's administration opening up cases against Elon that magically started once Biden became president. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on there. And like back to the other comment I made, like when I laid these sort of points out on X, I was surprised by how open-minded the discussion was around that. It was very open mind. It wasn't necessarily like, oh, like you said, like Trump is a symbol of everything anti-green, everything anti-Tesla, everything anti-Elon. The conversation was a lot more open than my usual posts that I make around Tesla and say Biden, the Biden administration. And then it's like it seems like if you're a Tesla fan or an Elon fan, you automatically dislike Biden. Like a significant percentage of it. And maybe that's, you know, maybe that's the slight echo chamber or bias that maybe my audience has, where there is a pro Biden, pro Tesla camp somewhere, you know, that exists. But I don't know if that's even a thing, but that's besides the point. I think this sets up Tesla and it puts them in a unique position where an endorsement of Trump could give Elon a lot more support than the current administration has given him to set up what he thinks is needed to get the supply chain and the manufacturing capacity for electrification and autonomous vehicles actually through in the United States and the Western world for that matter, right? And so that's a very interesting one. And just from a national security standpoint, which is something that I know the right of the political party, they're typically very big on, is like national security and nationalism and patriotism. You know, what's the most American made car in the world? Tesla. What is very important for the future of national security? How about securing the supply chain for the next generation transportation systems, aka electric vehicles and autonomous cars?
And all the weapons that are built on that same technology.
Exactly. And who is the person? Okay, rockets. Rockets seem to be a big one, right? And so like getting yourself aligned with a person that you think can give you the best backing from that perspective, you know, seems like a good move, but it is a sign of the times that the guy that's leading the green revolution has endorsed what many have said in the past to be the antithesis of the green revolution, which is Trump. So it's fascinating. At the very least, it's fun to talk about.
Just to give the audience some context, and I'll plug this again, like I always do. Go back and read the Wait But Why blog posts about Elon Musk, Tesla, Neuralink, SpaceX. Just read all of them. You need to. One of the points that Tim makes. I think maybe it was in The Chef and His Secret Sauce, the one about how Elon works. The point that he said is, you know, Elon, he identifies these mission critical goals that he wants to make progress on, that being, you know, the transition to sustainable energy, having reusable rockets so that we can go out among the stars, these types of things, Neuralink to try and give us the ability to fuse with AI in case, you know, so that we can go along for the ride instead of just have it leave us behind. These types of things, he identifies the goal, and then he's like, okay, to accomplish that goal, what we need to do is we need to create an economic forcing function that makes the achievement of that goal inevitable, that the economics will push everything towards that, the achievement of that goal. And so lowering the cost of access to space by 10 times or 100 times or 1,000 times, once it's that cheap, there is so much interest in going out there that everyone in the world will help him accomplish the goal of traveling out into space and colonizing places like the moon or Mars. And so that's what he's done with Tesla this whole time, is try to drive down the cost of the vehicle. Obviously, we're still kind of early. We're really kind of around price parity right now with ICE. But the trend is clear that over time, EVs are going to be much, much cheaper, regardless of who's in the White House the next 4 years, and regardless of their attitudes towards the climate. And I don't think Elon feels necessarily threatened by the fact that Trump may be someone who is opposed to a lot of the climate agenda. And like the work that is being done right now by China and by Tesla makes this transition an inevitable outcome, pretty much.
Because like, there's just not, it's economic. Yeah.
Exactly. That everyone, based on their own self-interest, over time is going to switch to EVs because it's cheaper, it saves them money, and it's a superior product. That's going to happen. So, you know, I think it would be wise for people to understand that, in my opinion, decarbonization of our transportation system is in the bag already. We accomplished that goal. It's going to take a number of years to play out, but that's not at risk based on who's in the White House. And I don't think in Elon's mind it's at risk either. So take that for what it's worth. I do have a question for you, Farzad. So, you know, Elon has endorsed Trump, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Trump is being super friendly with Elon. And, you know, he's been making a number of anti-EV comments recently that are pretty ridiculous. Do you think he's pandering to his base? Do you think that these are honest opinions, strongly held, or is this just, you know, fluff? And do you think that Elon can / will win him and his administration over? Do you think that they'll recognize his importance and support him?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. I mean, there is a compilation we made on this channel, actually, of Elon Musk, like Donald Trump on Elon Musk and Elon Musk on Donald Trump. It was basically on the same video. And through the research, one of the things that's been very consistent from Trump is that he has spoken positively about Elon almost always, save one or two truths that he's put on his Truth Social. I still can't believe posts are called truths. It's wild, hilarious. But anyway, shout out Truth Social, I guess, if you're a user. More power to you. America, baby.
Just leaning into the doublespeak motif. I mean, literally everything that comes out of Washington is like the Inflation Reduction Act that is going to stimulate massive inflation.
Yeah. Amazing. Everything on Truth Social is the truth. There's no lies on Truth Social. Anyway, fan or no fan of Donald Trump, I think outside of the very diehard fans of Trump, I think everybody knows that he just says whatever. He just says he's a master marketer. I mean, he's not dumb. I think everybody, most reasonable people would agree, he's not a dumb person. He's a very intelligent person. And even if you just look at on Saturday, what happened on Saturday, like the dude almost died. And then after making sure he had his shoes on, right? Let me get my shoes. He's like, okay, hold on a second. Let's not leave yet. And then he did that iconic, you know, fight thing that he did. So even in the moment where he almost died, his brain is switched on to marketer mode. So he's brilliant. I mean, when it comes to that, he's absolutely brilliant, right? So I think what's fascinating, though, is that I do think Trump respects Elon quite a bit. I really do think so. I think he has a lot of respect for him because he's a businessman, because he's an entrepreneur. You know, I think Trump's history has been that of, you know, business and entrepreneurship. Again, setting aside how he arrives, because I know there's a lot of, well, you know, he scammed people, blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool. Let's set that aside. That's his history. So I think from that perspective, he respects Elon a lot. And he's been very consistent, relatively consistent on his support. Where he has flip-flopped is the EV stuff. I mean, he historically has been quite, you know, that stupid comment he made in Nevada, where he was like just saying all this crap about electric vehicles, how, you know, they don't go more than 100 miles or whatever he was saying. I forget exactly what he was saying, but just a bunch of crap. He was just spewing a bunch of garbage. But what was interesting about the Nevada rally was that, you know, if you know Tesla, they have a gigafactory there. They make batteries out there and other products as well. And speaking that to that audience, the audience was just standing there listening. They weren't like, ooh, yay, screw batteries. They're just like, all right, like, we all know Tesla's here. Like, what are you saying? So it's kind of interesting watching that. And it's not soon after that his rhetoric changed from EVs are bad to like, hey, I like EVs. I like Teslas. Elon's great. I like Elon. You know, EVs are cool, but there can't be any incentives. We can't, you know, we have to let the people decide. We have to make it fair. You know, there can't be any incentives. And so his rhetoric has changed as of, and this was significant, you know, way before Saturday, what happened on Saturday. So it's hard to tell with the EV stuff, but I think Elon's well positioned with some of the points that I made earlier around national security, ramping up the supply chain, ramping up manufacturing capacity, making sure that we outcompete our biggest rival in China. These are very palatable things to the political right. I really think these are the key. And what's interesting about this whole subject is, like, from the very beginning, if you really think about a company like Tesla is like, it should be non-political. It's like, there's no real political, there shouldn't be a political bias to a company like Tesla because it is. I know, but there shouldn't be, because there's so much overlap between both political parties. You know, on the left, it's like moving us off of a limited resource in fossil fuels and getting us to renewable sources by leveraging solar, wind, hydro, all that stuff, by leveraging batteries, and then moving our transportation system over to that so that we're not putting carbon in the air. So that's a beautiful left-leaning message. And then the right one is, oh, by the way, when you do that, you create energy independence because you no longer have to rely on your enemies to buy oil to power all the crap in our country. So then all of a sudden it becomes this nationalistic thing. And then on top of that, you say, oh, and by the way, we're going to nationalize and localize all the supply chain and manufacturing. So it's built in America, baby. It's built in America by American workers with American materials, you know? And it's like the beautiful marriage of like left and right. And that's why it's, for me, it's like, okay, so like from the very beginning, the stated goal of the company has been non-political. It's just, you know, it's, and now we're here. Right. And now we're here. And now that we're here, what's interesting is that the leader of that company has, you know, effectively navigated in a way, either on purpose or by accident, or just capitalizing on the situation that we're at in some ways. He's like, okay, he's shifting. He's almost depoliticizing the brand. I would argue it was probably more political before than it is now, because before, electric vehicles were seen specifically as a left-wing product, as a liberal rich toy, rich person's toy, right? And now it's like, you know, now that before Elon endorsed Trump, it was like, oh, look at this crazy right-wing nut on Twitter saying crazy stuff. So people are like, it's the equivalent of a MAGA hat for, you know, cars or whatever. And now when I look at my audience and I look at my comments and I look at my replies and my DMs, it's a lot more varied. I mean, I get people, hey, you know, I long-term liberal, you know, Elon sometimes pisses me off, but I love my Tesla. Long-time liberal, I like what Elon's saying. He's a true liberal, love my Tesla. You know, Republican, recently got a Tesla. I love the car. I love what Elon stands for. Never really, thought about buying an EV, but because of Elon, I bought an EV and I love the car. So it's like, I get like this mishmash of commentary now that I've never seen before. And so I think to the person that doesn't follow this closely, potentially, maybe there is a conclusion that they come to that says the brand and the individual has never been more political or more divisive. But in reality, from what I'm seeing, and if you just look at, you and I see the analytics for this channel on the back end, right? It seems like Elon's never been more popular. And you can't be more popular. There's no way for you for that person to grow in popularity if you're just niching down to the extremes. It's impossible. There's just not enough eyeballs. So by default, I think the how this story is evolving over time, it's sort of entering this true mass market appeal that is sort of catalyzed by this endorsement of this presidential candidate that just went through one of the craziest things I've ever seen, just one of the luckiest things I've ever seen. And all of a sudden, it's palatable to talk about an Elon Musk endorsement of Donald Trump within the context of Donald Trump potentially, with his new wisdom, newfound wisdom, who knows? We'll find out this week with his speech at the RNC to bring a unifying message to America, potentially. Who knows? I don't know. Did I even answer your question?
Kind of, not really.
What was your question even?
Do you need round two on a crack at it? The question was,
I'll give you a sentence.
Do you think Trump will really come around to supporting Elon? And so one of the things that I would be shocked by is if the amount of regulatory agency scrutiny against Elon doesn't, magically disappear if Donald Trump wins the presidency. Like, all of this just harassment against him by everybody, the SEC, the ridiculous stuff going on in the court of Delaware, like just a lot of this stuff, I think will not like instantly all go away 100%, but I think it will get like dramatically better very, very quickly.
Hilarious how the president influences that, huh? That's weird.
Yeah. And just, not even like, don't have to give orders, just be like, yeah, I don't like that guy. And, kind of just takes the gloves off for a number of people who are like, okay, I want to make a name for myself. And Elon, that's a big fancy plaque to put on my wall. I'm going to go get him.
The catalyst.
But anyways, yeah, the question was, do you think that he'll really come around to supporting Elon? Well, and really the biggest question I have is, do you think he will fully recognize the central importance of Elon in all of the different things that he's doing, artificial intelligence, SpaceX and everything, to the United States national security efforts and interests?
I think he has a better chance doing that with Trump than with Biden. I think that's like my answer. It's like, I don't know. I don't know what's in his brain. But to me, it seems like there's a better chance with Trump, because Trump and Elon have a lot more in common than Biden and Elon. Biden is literally a puppet of the UAW in a way when it comes to the auto industry. He is. I mean, it's, I firmly believe that he is. Forget his politics. I think the UAW has him, and he has a UAW, and that EV summit was more than enough proof to show that it doesn't matter how brazen it is, he will go out of his way to ensure the UAW gets all the attention, and any competitors to the UAW gets sidelined at least in the best case scenario, right? So I think he has a better chance with Trump. And maybe his thought process is okay, if I endorse him, let's role play a little bit, right? So like, it's hard as an American to, at least this is how I feel, it's hard not to feel a sense of like wanting unity and being like, wow, this is like really like, this is uniquely American to see whoever it was in his shoes, but Donald Trump in this case, being able to survive something like that and having those iconic images. It stirs a certain type of emotion inside of it. It's like, yeah, this is fucking awesome. Let's finally come together. Like, enough is enough. This is crazy. And so maybe within, we're all human, Elon's human. So maybe he's like, okay, I am moved by this moment. And I see this guy has had to, right or wrong, had to survive many different challenges that have been thrown at him by different parties. And maybe he sees a little of himself in him and vice versa. And is like, I got this guy's back. You know, he made the one comment where he, you know, there was a tweet or a post that he made that said, there hasn't been a president this tough since Theodore Roosevelt, you know? And one knows that if there's one thing Elon takes pride in is his toughness, right? So, okay. So maybe it's like, okay, I see commonality there. And maybe the hope is like, hey, if I, and I hate that the United States system works this way, but it does, is like, hey, if I endorse him and I fund his campaign, then I can be somebody that I can get myself partner with somebody that I will actually listen to me and will actually help the country move towards where it needs to move to so that it doesn't end up in a disadvantageous position versus China and its rivals, especially at a time where Western society has been in a little bit of a confusing time in the last decade or so, especially as it pertains to maximizing manufacturing capacity and really doing everything we can to remain competitive in that world. That's how do you think about it? I mean, that's like my loose thoughts.
Yeah, I think that the thing that you said earlier about, you know, it's more likely with Trump than with Biden. I think it really is as simple as that. And, you know, if you've listened to Elon talk, he has described how he thinks in probability streams. And so he's going to navigate in the way, like he thinks that same way, probabilistically. Like, if what's the percent chance that Biden administration is going to come around to pull their heads out of their butt when it comes to all these very important things? Very low. What's the probability that the Trump administration would have a better position on a lot of those things? Is like, well, you know, maybe it's not high, but it's higher. And because it's higher, and because Trump is the most likely candidate to win the presidency at this point in time, like, just, you know, if you run the math as like you're playing poker or these types of games, you realize that the strongest move that you can make, it's not a sure bet, but the strongest move that you can make is to go ahead and try to secure a position of influence in that administration as it comes to power. And you have a better shot of having that positive influence with them than with the Biden administration anyways. So that's, I think, a positive, or that's an accurate description, like you said, of how he's thinking about this. Then when I think about, you know, I think it's important, and obviously we're Tesla shareholders. A lot of the audience is Tesla shareholders. We're thinking about this kind of through the lens of how is this going to impact Tesla. And Tesla is an important piece of the national security picture, as we've outlined, because, you know, I think there's a lot of the future of military weapons technology is going to be dependent on battery powered things. And so battery powered supply chains are going to be important and all those things. But more importantly than all of those things, I think the area of artificial intelligence over the next, like the next 5 years, have the potential to be very critical point for the development of artificial intelligence and the race of artificial intelligence between China and the United States. And I think that what Elon is doing with XAI and what he's doing with, you know, robotaxis through Tesla, so real world AI through Tesla and the robotaxis and the Optimus project, but then also the LLMs that he's working on with XAI and their partnership with X, that those AI efforts really need to be, like, we need to have our ducks in a row as a nation and execute on those strategies well. And if Elon can have an influential voice in the Trump administration as they navigate that, because right now this is not an area that any administration has positive expertise in. It seems like they're all just doing terribly on that. And I would love for Elon to have a strong voice in the next administration to help make it a little bit more sane and functional I think we're really kind of getting in our way on this, and we're not doing well. And if we don't get it together, that we really have a shot of handicapping ourselves relative to China, and that being a very, very negative outcome, not only for the West, but for the world in general.
I agree with that AI point a lot. And it's, I think it's like aligns very similarly to the EV picture as well. Like you said, it's like, it's the bigger Tesla gets, the bigger SpaceX gets, the bigger XAI gets, the bigger X gets, the how Elon and his companies intertwine with macro and politics becomes greater and greater. They become this, like, they become this blob, because what Elon Musk is building is foundational by design. Like transportation systems, energy systems, artificial intelligence, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of chips that are suited specifically for artificial intelligence over time, millions of inference computers out on the road, brain chip interfaces, you know, like the Boring Company with tunnels. So the actual gateways between point to point. I'm missing a company in there somewhere.
Well, you didn't really talk about SpaceX. You said transportation companies, and SpaceX is a transportation company, but yeah.
Yeah. And so as these get bigger and these become more influential, then the chances of those companies and or Elon not being noticed or potentially railroaded or sidelined or influenced by government agencies is zero. Like that not happening is a 0% chance.
Yeah.
And so I think as that grows, then, you know, from Elon's perspective is like, okay, so I'm in China and I'm seeing what a strong relationship with the government gives me, as long as I give them something they want in China, right? So he's experienced that. He's tried to do that in the United States and has been given the cold shoulder in many ways, his home country and where he's headquartered. And so, yeah, it would be wise to maximize the chances of being able to do what he wants to do by ensuring that he has good relationships with whatever administration is going to be in the White House for the next 4 years and potentially 8 years, 10, you know, 12 years, depending on who replaces Trump once his term is done, right? So that's how I view this. That's how I view this long term. And I think that the unfortunate part is that for the last 4 years, once Tesla and SpaceX really, because, you know, if you really think about when did SpaceX really and Tesla become, you know, come to prominence truly, is in the last 4 to 5 years. It's once the Model 3 ramped up fully and the Model Y launched and the Falcon 9 became fully reusable and they were using it quite often, and Starlink came, telecommunications, it's another one we left out, you know, social media, X. It's crazy. So it's like, it hasn't really happened until the last 4 or 5 years. Like, for the people that follow this company for a long time, we're thinking about it in the term of like potentially a decade plus that we've been at this, right? Like following this company closely. But in reality, it hasn't really captured the rest of it up until Biden took office, right around COVID. And so now with this next potential president, which I believe, you know, even though I likely not vote for Trump, you know, I think he will likely become the president of the United States in 2024. I think he's got way too much momentum now. I think this is Elon's attempt to say, my companies are relevant. They're becoming way too large. I feel like I'm being slowed down instead of helped unfairly. I'm going to put my efforts behind someone that will actually help me out, that I feel like will help me out. And if my choice is between Biden and Trump, Biden hasn't done much to help him out. Like you said, the IRA had to be fixed
help.
For him.
Yeah, like
negative help.
Literally, yeah, so, negative help.
So it's like, okay, so that within that context, this makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense, right? Question becomes, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Slight detour here. You know, the assassination attempt on Trump and his not only survival, but the way that he handled it there on stage. Do you think that makes it more likely now? Like, is the probability that he becomes president today the same as it was on Friday?
Oh, no. Way bigger. Way higher. Way higher. If I try to like think through this, it's like, okay, so if I'm looking at this, like, I'm still not planning on voting for the guy. Like, to be completely honest, I'm very happy that he's alive. And if he becomes president, I will be a good citizen and support his presidency, right? I've been trying to do that with Biden up until it became quite obvious that, you know, I just don't think he has it. He doesn't have to be replaced with Trump, right? But it doesn't seem like he's fit to be in office, but we'll set that aside. I still felt like, holy crap, I'm rooting for this guy. And I wrote that, like, I'm like, it's hard not to root for Trump after what happened. Cause it's like, you see, like how could you not root for somebody that like escaped death by an inch? And then he showed strength by being like, I'm still going to stand here and we're going to make sure that you know that I'm okay. Right. That invokes a certain type of emotion. It's very, very strong. And it seems like a lot of elections are emotional. It seems like when you're voting for somebody, it's difficult not to be emotional, or it's difficult not to be like, you know, center around one or two things. But I think if Trump can harness this energy that he's sort of captured by being extremely fortunate, where there's this it feels like it's now okay to say good things about Trump from people that, you know, initially couldn't say something good about Trump or were afraid to say good things about Trump, let's say. Like the air has loosened because it has humanized them a little bit. I think if you can capture that moment and deliver a truly unifying message this week at the RNC, where he makes a sincere effort to lead in cooling down the insane rhetoric we've had in our political climate for the last 4 to 8 years, let's say. If he leads in that with his, say, newfound wisdom from nearly escaping death, I think it's a 99.9% chance he wins. 99.9% chance. If I'm his advisor, I'm like, dude, you are the luckiest man alive. And you need to make sure that you are doing everything you can, if you truly care about this country, to unify it. And you don't unify it by attacking the other side because you feel like they attacked you. You try your best to act in a way where everybody can connect with your humanity and show maybe a little bit of forgiveness, let's say, right? Show a little bit of like, hey, you were attacking me this whole time, you know, because I know how he usually talks. These crooked politicians that were coming after crooked Joe Biden with his false cases, blah, blah, blah. It would be as simple as like, hey, I'm insanely lucky to be here. Thank goodness. Have I been unfairly attacked? Absolutely. Have I myself fueled a little bit of the rhetoric that has made this climate a little bit more divisive? Yes, I take some responsibility, even though I think the Democrats did it way worse. He can say that. Who cares, right? But the message should be, but ultimately, I'm here as somebody that shouldn't be here right now. And it's obvious that I was incredibly lucky and it could have been way worse. And it's because of the divisiveness we have in this country. And so I need to be responsible. I need to make sure that I do everything I can to cool down this climate. And I'm going to lead from the front. I'm going to lead from the front. I'm just going to stick to the facts. I'm going to focus on what we need to fix. And we're just going to do that. No more of this like stupid rhetoric. It just lead from the front. None of this like, oh, EVs are bad for you. EVs are stupid. You know, just this like just falsehoods that get spread all the time. Right? Just be the person that we know you can be. That's like, I think that's one of the big frustrations from people that I think want to support Trump, but they can't. If I put myself in their shoes, and a little bit part of me is like, okay, if you were just actually, if you had a shred of humility and just a shred of like proving to the country that you actually are doing this for the country, not for yourself, you would be 1,000 times more popular. 1,000 times more popular. right? But who knows? But maybe he's not that person. I don't know. You just made me go on a political rant. My God, we just lost 1,000 subscribers.
I did. And so I don't think that he would be more popular, honestly. I think he would be less popular because he wouldn't be talked about so much. Like, I think that's one of the things that he leans into. You know, just like we have learned with titles and thumbnails, like you've got to agitate, you got to stir the pot. And so that's the purpose of his rhetoric, is to stir the pot so that other people will talk about him. Because, you know, your ability to get votes is definitely a function of the number of people who know that you are running and think about it. And the way to get that to happen is to, you know, get massive earned media. So I don't know, you know, we'll see if he can change his tune and shift his strategy and be more unifying at this point in time. I think that like he is very, very popular to a very large swath of the country because he has advocated for them against a system that I think, you know, one of the things that I think has just become dramatically clear to the vast majority of the country, except for the like 10 to 15% of the left that still can't see this fact, that a lot of the things that, not just a lot, almost everything that Trump has said about the way that Washington works and about how corrupt the Democratic Party is and the Republican Party, like both of the RNC and the DNC, both of these apparatuses are just absolute Charlie Foxtrots. And yeah, they're just a mess. They're awful, awful, awful. And, you know, he has, and his portrayal of the media, you know, calling them out on being fake news. Like, he was right about a number of these things, and a huge portion of the country has felt like this was the case for a long time and felt powerless to do anything about it, or to, and it feels very vindicating for them, for someone to say what they have said or say what they have felt, if they haven't said it in public on stage, you know, to the whole world, and make those things known. Now, there's a lot of other things that he said that have been, you know, complete and utter nonsense. And but you just kind of have to, like, that's Donald Trump. You know, he's just both of those things all wrapped up into one. And I don't expect to see him move to a unifying message at this point in time. I would love to see it. Like, I 100% agree. I would love to hear him say that message, especially, and, you know, if anything was going to change his tune, it would be something like this. Assuming that this is an authentic thing that happened at these levels, you never know. You know, I'm not saying this is a hoax. I'm not saying that it's not a hoax. I'm saying that at this level, us normal people have a hard time having enough solid information to really have a strong sense of yay or nay in either direction.
That's what I would like to see. I don't know if we're going to see it. I think some of the early indications that there was an interview he did, there was something that was said where allegedly he said that he had a speech planned for the RNC. And then after everything that happened on Saturday, he tossed the entire speech and made a brand new speech that's geared to unify not just the United States, but the world. I mean, that's Trump speak for, like, I have the greatest speech of all time. Watch out. Here it comes. But the fact that the word unity is in there, I would love it. I would absolutely love it. I'll be completely honest. It's been very nice seeing both President Biden and President Trump speaking about unity at the same time and, like, talking to each other. Hey, I talked to Donald Trump. He's doing better. Good to hear it. You know, Trump is not like attacking Biden on this thing. He's just like, hey, we need to unify. We need to unify. It's like, okay, great.
Satire Sachs has been saying on the All In podcast recently is that, you know, a lot of the people that, like, that when Sachs and Chamath did the fundraiser for Donald Trump, you know, a few weeks back, that they were trying to, you know, drive home to him that we need you to express to the people how much you would like for the country to be unified instead of polarized and divided. And they, you know, David Sacks has said that that is something that Donald Trump really does care about. You know, I just have to take him at his word, because we certainly have not seen any evidence of that in a meaningful way, you know, from the outside that compels me personally. So hopefully he does care about that. And hopefully this will be the time for him to change his tune. I mean, I guess there's one other point that would support your idea that he is going to shift. And that is, he is an extremely savvy A, politician, but B, media personality. And like, the, you know, this is the moment in the story arc where it fits. And, you know, I'm sure that he can feel that. And so hopefully he does, because we certainly need that message at this point in time.
Never let a crisis go to waste. You know, as dark as it sounds in this situation, again, thankfully he's okay, but like, I'm pretty sure this is how Trump's brain works, because literally right after getting his ear shot off, he's like, let me get my shoes. And then he spent 10, 15 seconds on stage ensuring he had the photo op and ensuring that the people saw him. Okay, this guy's just wired different. Like, he's just wired different. And it's cool, honestly, in a way.
Yeah, let's keep the getting ourselves canceled via politics train going here for a second. The past 4 years, like, do you feel as negatively towards Trump today as you felt towards him in, say, 2019 or 2020, and all the, you know, all the media rhetoric that was so just insane? I mean, all of the legitimate Trump DDS, yeah, Trump derangement syndrome that was going on. Do you feel like, after watching what happened with COVID, after watching just our actions with Ukraine, our actions with Gaza, the relative peace that we had before that, like, how do you feel about Trump now compared to 4 years ago? And what's your assessment of his presidency now versus what was your assessment of his presidency as we were right in the middle of the beginning of COVID?
Yeah, I think, you're just trying to tank this channel. I love it. Let's go. Let's go to zero subs. Please subscribe and like. No, I love these kind of questions, because I think, like we talked about before, is like, this is... There is a marriage that's starting to come between what we usually follow and then what is going to be in the next 4 to 10 years, right? There's going to be a marriage of these things. So So back in 2019, 2020, I had a more visceral, emotional reaction towards Trump that was negative than I do now. And I think some of that for sure was cultivated by the media sources that I was consuming that had me convinced that this person was the second coming of Satan, right? That especially the younger I was, I remember very vividly when he was getting elected in 2016. FYI, I voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016, FYI, because I was convinced that Trump was a racist, evil person. I was convinced he was a racist, evil person. Then come 2020, the candidate that really caught my eye was Andrew Yang. And the reason why he caught my eye was because he was rational. He was logical. He was data-based.
Time out. So you voted for Hillary in 2016, but if you had had your choice, would you have preferred Bernie as the candidate in 2016?
Yes, I would have. I would have. Bernie, because Bernie, to me, was more authentic.
How did the DNC's handling of Bernie's candidacy make you feel at that point in time?
At that point in time, I didn't follow politics enough to really understand how dirty they did him, right? It's like, hey, even though people want you to be the president, nah, we want Hillary. Like, it's not really the people that want a president. It's us. It's that's why, you know, the DNC and the RNC are both... it's not really a democracy if you really think about it. When those two parties control the sort of, and this is why I would rather vote for RFK than for Trump, because I just want the two-party system to die. literally just for that function. I just want the two-party system to die. And I think RFK as a candidate is good enough to at least start moving the ball with that. If at anything, it's a vote of like displeasure with the current system that we have. And at the same time, I think he has good qualities. That he's not perfect, but he has good qualities.
But how could you waste your vote, man? Like, you can't waste your vote.
Because I'm an idiot, Hans. Because I'm a dumb person.
You got to choose.
Yeah, I'm an idiot. Okay. So to answer your question, after 2020 and after seeing Andrew Yang and seeing that, wow, there actually could be great candidates right now. There could be great candidates for president from what I perceive. I was like, okay, what is going on? This is weird. This is weird. And so in 2020, you know, because then I saw him being sidelined by the apparatus. I saw him being left out of like on mainstream media, like MSNBC and CNN. I saw him being left out of graphics where he was polling high enough to be on the graphic, but he was just left out on purpose because he was sending a message that was actually resonating with the population. But they were trying everything to subdue him, right? And so I wrote him in 2020. I didn't vote for Biden or Trump, I wrote in Andrew Yang. And now with the benefit of hindsight, if I look at Trump, I really do think that if I look at what Trump did between 2016 and 2020, COVID notwithstanding, right? I think he did a better job than I initially thought, especially in 2020, because I think there were some biases that I had against him that were not rooted in logic, that were rooted in emotion, you know? And what's interesting about this whole thing is, so if I think about this and I'm like, okay, I draw a parallel to like what we follow here, the Tesla story as an example, there's so many parallels there because it's like, okay, the same exact thing has been happening with the story where there's been a lot of irrationality and emotion trying to judge what is happening in the world of electrification and sustainability that is very, very similar to the way these candidates are propagandized in mainstream media. It's like a one-to-one correlation.
Well, especially for, you know, us longtime Tesla shareholders who have experienced the massive FUD storms, you know, over the last 10 years. And when you realize that you have been, you know, you have been gaslit by not like the FUD storm against Trump was even bigger than the FUD storms have ever been against Elon. And it was against, you know, the entire country, basically. And that's, you know, I think when you step back and you finally realize that I'm not voting for the guy this time around. I actually did vote for him last time, even though I didn't like having to make that choice. But the two, like I've been voting for third party candidates now for a long time. And last time around, I just didn't feel like there was a third party candidate that was even viable to my low standards. And so I did feel like I needed to vote for what I, at that point in time, proceed, like, even though I was pretty frustrated with how he had handled all the rhetoric, the fact that we hadn't been in any wars for the first time the first time that I can remember being alive, that we had not started any new wars in a presidency, like, that piece really resonated with me.
And then the Abraham Accords, North Korea being the in between North Korea and South Korea, cooling down the tensions with China. Like, these are legitimate things he did.
Yes. Did you watch the Jared Kushner conversation on, was it Lex Fridman, I think, or was it All In?
I think he had maybe both. He had two.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. I watched
and maybe
them
that is right. Yeah. And I watched them both. That's right. I was so impressed by those conversations and just realizing, you know, obviously you can see these things kind of happening from an outside, but getting that inside perspective on how they did that. And I think that, you know, there is very legitimate reason to believe that if we had not flooded Iran with all kinds of money by rolling back the foreign policy that the Trump administration had enacted against them, that the money for the attacks on Israel would not have materialized, and we would not currently have this humanitarian crisis going on between Israel and Gaza. I think it's very legitimately it's much more probable that that would have been the outcome if Trump had been the president this time. But we also would be in a much more, I think, divided state as a nation than we are today. Like, even though we're polarized, I think we probably, the United States, would have been, yeah, in a worse place with regards to unity right now if he had been the president again. So, you know, it's just a hard set of decisions to make.
I think it's very fair to say that the average person...
I didn't even mention Ukraine, which
right, Ukraine
also,
is a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the average person's opinion of Trump for the last two presidential cycles, let's call it the last 8 to 10 years, it has been severely influenced by mainstream media that was dead set in painting him a specific way, because that mainstream media, for some reason, most of them are heavily influenced by one political party or have been. And I think that's what it seems like. That's what it seems like to me.
We'll just add to that, regardless of what you think people's politics are, one of the things that you cannot refute is that, man, CNN has made a lot of money by crapping on Trump for 8 years. That think like, what is a more profitable media storyline than Donald Trump sucks? Donald Trump is bad.
Pretty good.
You know, a lot of these obviously legacy media institutions are struggling financially at this point in time, but they were also struggling financially in 2014, 2015. And then all of a sudden, we can have this Orange Man bad storyline and just juice the bottom lines of all of these companies. And I think that one fact all by itself explains a whole lot of this for a whole lot of people. Now, it doesn't explain everything for everyone, but you know, that is just gasoline on the fire.
I think that's a more accurate statement what you just made, for sure. It's the how advertising works and what brings eyeballs to a story. What is it very much was the forcing function, one of the probably the largest forcing function in how Trump was painted for the last 8 years. And what's been fascinating to watch is sort of like watching the middle after the Trump presidency was done and after the Biden presidency is likely coming to an end, you know, Democrat or not. I think all polls are, especially now, are showing that, or will show that Trump is very firmly in the lead, will likely be the presidential, that the president of the United States. I've seen this shift. I mean, it's hard to ignore. Almost every podcast that I listen to, the tone that they took towards Trump now versus now has shifted completely. And then ever since Saturday for the last 2 days, as somebody who spends quite a bit of time online, really, you know, wrapping my head around what's happening, primarily for this channel, because I like to be well informed, you know, to understand what I'm going to talk about on this channel. But it's like that, all of a sudden, it's like, okay, cool. Yeah, we can talk good about Trump now. We can say good things about Trump. And it's like socially okay. And I saw a picture of, there were people apparently in San Francisco just walking around with MAGA hats on, with Trump hats on. Like, it just, and it was just fine. It was okay. When's the last time that's happened in San Francisco? Never. You know, so it's like stuff like, just very small stuff like that, I think, over time has increased. And even just again, like the messages that I get and the tone of the conversations that I'm in, it's a lot less emotional and it's a lot more logical. It's just a very interesting time. And it feels like it flipped on a dime. It just like that.
So obviously, you know, a big part of that is going to be this failed assassination attempt. But even, you know, I feel like things were really, it was ripe for that moment already with just the very blatant cognitive decline of Biden and his performance in the debates. And so, I mean, what is your read on, especially as someone who has voted with the left, you know, historically, do you think there's just like blinders that have come off for the average left-leaning voter as to how corrupt the Democratic Party system is and would have to be in order to run this man?
I think there has been a general awakening to how gross our political system is. I think a lot of that was catalyzed by Trump in 2016. And the rhetoric that we've been in the last 4 years has been the Democratic Party trying to out-Trump Trump. And in the process, I think sort of doing it with a candidate that is very clearly not well, you know, that as a human being, I want him to like live his last years in peace and with happiness around him, not in a situation where clearly he's not fit to do it in my opinion, right? So I think that has given people a lot of like there's, I think that the percentage of people that sat down watching the debate that said, hey, this person is fit to run, was very small. They're probably like, what the hell is this? Like, why is it these two guys? I think that's a general, you know, if I want to put my finger on the pulse of like the majority, like the silent majority, it's like, really, this is the best we can do? Really? I have to vote for one of these two guys? Like, are you seriously going to put me in that situation? So I think that's the vibe. And that's where people are at. And I think a lot of Democrats feel that way too. At least the ones that I've spoken to. I mean, I left the Democratic Party. I'm independent, you know, and I know many people that have done that as well. One of my very close friends who's been a lifelong Democrat, who ran for office as a Democrat in his local jurisdiction, very recently left the Democratic Party because he just could not stand the blatant just disrespect for the voter base. Just like how can you not see, how could you assume that I'm blind? Like it's so disrespectful. It really, really is.
Patronize me. For saying what is obviously true. Like, we can all see this. Like, you can't make me say that this is not what I see.
100%. But here's the crazy part now, right? Here's the crazy part. Is that now with what happened on Saturday and the popularity that Trump's going to gain from this, especially if he knocks it out of the park with his speech this week at the RNC, the Democrats will 1,000% run Biden because running anyone else would be a political suicide for that person. Because they're just going to get steamrolled. As somebody who's not likely to vote for Trump, I recognize the fact that with the events that just have happened and his speech that could unify the country in some way, it's might as well just write it in. It's a done deal, right? And so from the Democratic Party perspective, why? If you're somebody who wants to be president one day and somebody that wants to be successful, why would you be like, hey, Biden, you should step down, bro. Like, we've been telling you, you should step down. You should really think about stepping down. No, it's going to be like, yes, Joe, you got this. We're behind you. We need to be unified. We have your back. You can do this, Joe. It's comeback Joe season. Let's do it. And the whole time they're like, it's like a sacrificial lamb. Throw him to the next debate. Let him do another poor performance. Let him go to the ballots and then get him, you know, let him be beat by one of the widest margins in presidential election history, you know? And then 2028, once Trump is not even on the ballot because he's served his two terms, then you start seeing maybe fresh blood in the Democratic Party. That's how I'm reading this picture.
Well, I hope they can get their act together a little bit and come back to be a much more sensible party. I would normally be a left-leaning person, but not in our current, you know, American political system. I just can't support what we've got going on right now. So, yeah, I would agree with that. And this is the way that the party systems have been for a long time. I kind of first noticed it just growing up with Ron Paul, the RNC. Pulled a lot of shenanigans to keep Ron Paul from, you know, being a viable candidate. I think very similar. I think Ron Paul was like the Republican version of Bernie Sanders. It would have been back in 2000. I'm thinking maybe it was 2008. It may have been the year that Obama ran, that they did that. And it's just like, opened my eyes to, okay, this is messed up. And then I saw it, oh, okay, that's the way it works over here. That's the way that the DNC works as well. Okay, I got it. Like, I understand now. That's why, you know, this thing that people are just finally real, like, these two guys, really? Like, that is because the DNC and the RNC are so jacked up and have been for so long, and we have refused to force them to do any better. Like, the fact that we have not held them accountable is the reason they can be so jacked up. You know, going back to the conversation that we had last week about checks and balances, like, we need healthy checks and balances. And right now there are no healthy checks and balances on either of these two parties. And it's imperative that they have some accountability that helps to make them more sane. Like, they are just both absolutely insane at this point in time.
It's much closer aligned to prom than a democracy, right? It's prom. You know, it's, you got left-wing prom and right-wing prom, and the
prom winners. Know,
the prom winners are the ones that run for president. And then we vote. You know, and then we will.
One of the dynamics in, I think, both the perception, but also just like the logistical way that this tension between Donald Trump and the Democratic Party has played out over the last 8 years and, you know, will continue to play out, is captured in the Nietzsche quote that says, be careful who you set as your enemies, because that is who you will become most like. And I think that Donald Trump recognized a lot of this corruption in the Democratic Party. Because remember, Donald was a huge Clinton supporter for a long time and was huge in the Democratic Party for a long time. And I think he understood this rot that existed inside of the party apparatus from an insider's perspective. And this was what it was that he was basically casting as his enemy in all of his rhetoric. You know, this is what he has talked about. And so he can justify a lot of terrible behavior. And this is, you know, this is the mechanics of why Nietzsche says what he says. You know, if you are going to do battle with someone who is an awful, awful adversary, then you, unless you can manage to be much, much, much smarter than them, and you can maneuver them around where you can keep from sinking to the level of using the tactics that they use, which is rarely ever the case, then you are forced to adopt those awful tactics. This is how you become the thing that it is that you hate. But, you know, the same thing is true in reverse, that the Democratic Party has painted Donald Trump as this evil supervillain. And in the process of painting him as this evil supervillain that must be defeated at all costs, has justified ruining democracy in exactly all of the ways that they say they are defending it from Donald Trump. That, and I think this is what, you know, the vast majority of Americans can observe objectively, because we're not captured inside of this apparatus, is like, you can't just use the courts to try and silence him the way that you have been trying to. And you can't, you know, you can't just use the media the way that you've been using. Like, all of this stuff is absolutely unfair. Y'all are being bullies and liars and all of these things. And I just, like, I cannot support how insane the playbook is that they are running against him. At the same time, you know, it's like, I don't want to support what Donald Trump is saying either. Like, I don't like either of these things. And it's because they are locked in this battle of, you know, choosing each other as enemies and being convinced that each other are basically the, you know, complete manifestation of evil incarnate, and therefore they can do whatever they have to do in order to defeat them. So, yeah, I think that's part of the story of how we got to where we are today. And I think, to your point earlier, it does, like, we can only do that for so long, and we really need to turn away from that on both counts. Hopefully Donald will turn away from that and more towards the unifying message, as we mentioned. And hopefully the Democratic Party can also have a come to Jesus, if you will, on the way that they have become the thing that they claim to hate.
Just somebody has got to lead. That's what true leadership is. Somebody's got to lead in that. And hopefully we see that this week. And if we don't, then I think there's a chance this things could get worse. But something tells me that we're on the way. Like, well, I'm actually oddly optimistic about what this upcoming weekend will look like versus last weekend. I have a sense that things will look a lot more optimistic and hopeful for America in the long term than it has been for the last 8 years. It's got to come at some point. Like, we can only be in this state of like just malaise and feeling like everything's so divisive and ugly and dumb for so long. Shit's got to get better at some point. And so that's where my naiveness kicks in.
Yeah, and I would caution against your naiveness on this point, because usually the way this gets better is we say, hey, those bad guys out there, they're even worse than the bad guys in here. Let's all unify around killing those bad guys over there. And I mean, this is the story of humans across time, but this
that's where
is
AI
definitely
comes
part
in.
Of the American story. Yeah.
Hopefully, that's where AI comes in. AI is the bad guy. I'm kidding. Could be. Who knows?
Well, yeah, it's either the bad guy or it's the thing that we use to conquer the bad guy. You know, there's a lot of ways that one could go. You could very well be right.
Or it's the thing that thinks we're the bad guy.
Would it be wrong?
All right, let's leave it off on this very upbeat tone. Bye, everybody. Woo-hoo! Have a good day. Woo! Okay. Damn, that was fun.